Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Wow, I went a little hot on the music there. I hope that got everyone awake, excited to listen about politics. There's 1 week left in the Utah legislative session. I'm going to admit during this podcast what I admitted earlier today. I am covering the legislative session, but somehow, with how life's been working out, have not even walked up on the Hill this year, which I'm ashamed to admit. So I will do my best, as always, to discuss these issues without walking on the Hill. With us is Maura Carabello with the Exoro Group, who's been up there multiple times. Greg Hughes, who literally lives up there.
It's the most beautiful thing to have the shortest session in America because it's already too long. So it's time to land that plane. You need to get out of there.
I've met with several people today who've spent a lot of time up there, and everyone seems like they're at their breaking point. And yesterday, I think, was like a 14-hour day for a lot of people. I just feel like that boiling sensation.
It feels rough right now. It feels rougher to me than usual. Maybe not. But it's a marathon, and it is rough right now. And people are afraid. And I feel like also just a shout out to protesters. There seem to have been a lot of protests this year.
Yeah, there are. And a lot of the protests don't even seem to be specifically connected to the legislative session, but just things that are extraneously going on around in politics that are making people mad. So, yeah, it's an interesting time to be alive and here in the great state of Utah. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend, though, so I hope you listen to this podcast outside.
It's going to be such a good weekend.
It's going to be pretty. But lots to talk about. And it seems to me that all of a sudden, with 1 week left, there are a lot of things that I'm sure lots of people have been working hard on behind the scenes, but they're new to me and they seem to be moving fast. So we'll try to go through some of this. One thing that we're watching, I always watch this kind of thing as a journalist, is that we have some bills that would make it so that there might be less public access to government records. I'm a big fan of sunshine laws. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. Right now, I believe SB 240, the Government Records Access and Management Act and Amendments, this is from Representative Kurt Bramble, it would exempt public officials' calendars from grandma requests. Grandma, if you are not familiar, is how someone like myself would make a request for a news story and ask for government information, and most of the time they give it to us. There's been discussions recently because people wanted the calendar of Attorney General Sean Reyes to understand what he was doing with his time and maybe his connections with former OUR founder Tim Ballard. But now there might be protections to calendars across the board. Greg, you have a very contemplative, face on right now.
Yeah.
Do you think these calendars should be protected, or do we need to open them up and let people understand what their elected leaders are doing with their time and with who? Or if you have a hot date with someone that's not your wife, you want to protect it, you should be able to protect it, and voters don't need to know.
Yeah, would you emphasize that? That was a wild hypothetical that
was a good husband with a great wife. That is not you.
So look, if you're full time, if you're on the clock full time as a public servant, putting out a calendar of what you're doing or what meetings you're having, if I just think about it, that's not offensive to me. It seems to make sense. Where I think things that got a little cynical or where things got a little weird is that I think that reporters started looking at maybe if you're giving a speech and they wanted to see what group you're talking to and if it were a Christian group or if it was some group that they could criticize, it started to feel more political than it was informing about what you're doing on the public, you know, for and on behalf of the public. Again, I go back to if that's full, there's some cynicism about that, but about why people want the calendar.
Because you have a private life that you should be able to keep private.
Or they want to just demonize groups that you might be meeting with and make inferences about who you are because of who you're speaking with. I think that's where cynicism starts. But where it really gets odd for me is, when I was a public servant and I was asked about my calendar, because it's not a full-time job, I could give you my calendar of my during the session, what we did, and because I was doing it full time, But I didn't provide my business calendar or my social calendar or my private calendar, and it was a part-time, it's a part-time legislature. And so I think it would be probably the same for city council members who go to city council meetings once a week. Providing their calendars, all of their calendars of what they do every day, I think it's it just doesn't apply. So I think defining this better as Senator Bramble does, I think is good. I think it's good to just get the ambiguity out there and just have, you know, have some bright lines on what the media is entitled to or not.
So I think using Greg's explanation, which I don't fully disagree with, but that's the opportunity I think that the legislative leaders missed the boat on. So one, it definitely felt, and if this wasn't the case, boy, I couldn't see it. It felt like there was a kerfuffle with the media about a calendar, and then coincidentally, a couple of weeks later, there's a bill slamming it down. So that call and response just doesn't, it's not great leadership. But what I don't understand, and over the decades, we've gone back and forth on this in Utah, so we redefine access a lot. But what I didn't get is exactly what Greg said. Most instances where I have seen requests for public calendars, of which you have at the federal government level, the president, they just make a series of definitions that says, this is what a public event is, this is what a private event is, and we don't have to show you our private events, and we'll show you our public ones. So the president releases his calendar every day. It's not everything the president's doing. And sure. I want to get clear on the nuances here. So I'm making this up.
With his son, Hunter.
Well, importantly, if he is hanging out with his secretary of housing and they're having an internal conversation, it's not necessarily a public meeting. There is nuance to this. So I want to be clear. I want to live in the shades of gray. Clearly you're going to lunch with your wife. It's no one's business.
Right.
Those are easy calls. What's a harder call is what if a lawmaker were meeting with a group or an individual that was seeking counsel from them. I don't think that's a public meeting. I see, though, interestingly enough, public meetings do maybe include nonprofits or include people petitioning you, the United Way coming in to talk to you about something. So what I don't know is why not say our default position is public meetings should be public. Am I acting on the behalf of the state? You should kind of know what and then I totally agree, representatives and senators, you choose what it would mean to be a public meeting then. But here's the thing that I think where they shot themselves in the foot. If this, in fact, came from the accusation of being available to speak at a right-wing Christian group and there was criticism there.
So are all Christians right-wing?
I guarantee you that if he had released his weekly calendar, we would have all been pleasantly surprised by the amount of different people he listens to.
Sure.
So it felt like, instead of being afraid of the media, if they just tried to sort of work with them, I think we would all be surprised at the breadth and depth of the leadership meetings that people take. I know I believe that both our president and speaker actually try and meet with anyone who asks, maybe not in the middle of the session, but it's not impossible to get meetings with people here. So I think that had they been a little more nuanced and a little more sophisticated, defaulted to we're going to share with the public as much as we can, now it just looks like they're playing hide the ball. Now it gets conflated with the attorney general's troubles. I just think it was a bad PR move. And I think it would have been fair to say, you know what? We do want to show you our public calendars, but we are going to define what public means. It doesn't mean you have access to everything I do all the time. I'm I'm a part-time lawmaker. This law will apply to council members and mayors, just like you said. So I think there could be some nuances there. But to shut down the media just tends to exacerbate the conversation.
Just makes
not
it worse,
help it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's my point of view.
Well, lightning speed. I know that there's been a lot going on behind the scenes, but I feel like it's been very quick in the public's mind eye that we've all of a sudden been talking about NHL, MLB, all of it coming to Utah. And I think there's excitement because the concept of having these big teams here and new stadiums is all super awesome. But we were kind of just recently introduced to the idea that this might be a real possibility here in the state of Utah. Couple families, the Miller family, who obviously has a lot of money, and also current Jazz owners who have a lot of money, are very invested in this and working on it behind the scenes. So there's a lot of questions about When you have billions of dollars, what can you do on the own, on your own? And when do you need the legislature to get involved? And obviously there's reasons for both. So we have a couple bills right now. The MLB one is House Bill 562, Utah Fair Park Area Investment and Restoration District. We also have the NHL bill, which is Senate Bill 272, which is the Capital City Reinvestment Zone Amendments. And that's from Senator Dan McKay. So I want to start with the MLB. This one, to help in the funding, would raise hotel taxes. So a lot of people who are probably from outside of Utah coming to visit, their taxes would go up as they're staying here to help us pay for this. There would also be bonding to cover the cost of the development and construction of the stadium. Mara, is this a smart way to go about this? Has this been well thought out? Is it moving too quickly? Where are you seeing this?
So one, I like that we're talking about them separately. They're very different bills. There's a very different approach. And where I think we've gone wrong is that I think there are two really important public policy discussions. One is, do we all want a stadium? And two is, what's the process to get to the stadium? And the reason I'm bringing that up is that, for lack of a better word, I think there's been a lot of peer pressure. That's my nice version of saying there's been some major political kneecapping. That if you disagree with the process being used, then you're a jerk and don't want Major League Baseball. So let me tell you where I am. I want Major League Baseball, maybe. I love baseball, and I would probably be a season ticket holder. I love all the innings. My family has been Rocky ticket owners since the first year the Rockies were the 92. Last expanding expansion team in Denver. So I love baseball. But this package has some really questionable things from a good tax point of view. And I also don't like, I think the public would have a lot more support if you dealt with them sort of straightforwardly. So one thing I'll just say, so this group of people keep conflating that if you want baseball, you therefore have to like what I'm telling you in terms of funding. So a couple of funding things that I find astonishing from our Republican legislators is a statewide tax to pay what is a regional stadium. And there's just no data to show that Moab is going to be benefited by this. Here's what doesn't bother me. My case for support for MLB would be that it, two reasons. One, I think it's a cultural boon. I think we're at a cultural tipping point, and we're finally a big enough metropolitan area that we can handle more restaurants and more bars and more clubs and more comedians and more. And I think sports fits into that. And I also believe that a really rich bunch of people have said, hey, listen, I'll invest $3.5 million. And make no mistake, you invest money to make money. You don't. Private sector does not invest as a benevolent act. And if the government wanted to say, listen, we're going to pony up just to get that money in. But what they're selling us is that it will help the economy of the region. And they're also telling us it'll help the economy of the state. There's so many studies that debunk that, that with a straight face, you can't tell that to me. So one, just tell me why you want to do it. It's not going to help the West Side. So like, don't sell me that pile. I don't like when people sell me things that aren't true. Sell me something that is true, which is we got a major player who wants in. Now, in terms of the timeline, no, they don't have to pass it this legislative session. But the principles of it are really probably not great fundamentals. TRT statewide is a horrible play. They were better off when they were regionalizing it. And this distinguishes itself from the topic we'll talk about next, because I don't feel the same way about
and
the
TRT
other.
TRT is transient room tax. That is your tax on hotels, lodging, Airbnb, those types of things.
And that's then they're going to place an additional tax on any restaurants and bars. And the other thing that I just think is egregious, and every Republican, I am taking away your conservative card, the fact that taxpayers will own this stadium, holy guacamole, man. That's just so fundamentally unsound. Yeah, I'm going to end my diatribe by saying, do I want MLB? Yes. Do I think there's a role for taxpayer money? Yes. But you don't get to hoodwink me into saying that I'm not a supporter unless I buy everything you're selling me. Those are two different policy discussions, and I find it insulting that I have to buy the entire package in less than 10 days or I'm not a supporter. I'm a huge supporter. I'm a supporter of the Millers. I'm a supporter of their investment in this area. But I think what they cobbled together is less than perfect and less than good for the state.
All right, there's always one more than one way to skin a baseball. Do you agree with Mara on this? Or are you all in?
Yeah, do I seem a bit subdued today? Can you sense my melancholy
What's attitude? Making you all sad?
It's depressing, and this is actually what's depressing me.
Okay.
Not in a million years did I think that our Republican legislature, supermajority, would go around and tax this entire state on its hotel and lodging. And by the way, that isn't, if someone tells you that that is out-of-state people, understand that probably 40%, 39 to 40% of the hotels and Airbnb bookings are Utahns that are traveling around Utah. If you get to some counties, that can be as high as 70%.
Dropped a heck of a lot of money in St. George last weekend.
I've done it myself.
The rates go up super high.
Well, so hoteliers today in committee, this passed out of committee today, mm-hmm. and it actually went to the floor, and it's, if it hasn't passed, it will. But the hotelier today in Washington County said that in his hotel, it's close to 50% that are Utahns staying.
Yeah. So when I read people saying, well, you know, out-of-state people are only going to pay for this. It's just not true. This is a tax on Utahns. It's a statewide tax for a billionaire's baseball stadium and on North Temple. And I find it to be, I think it's a cavalier and reckless use of taxpayer dollars and tax increases for a ballpark that, to Mara's point, you can't find an economist that tells you that the economy's improved by it. It isn't. It is not the lift that I think some think it is. And having been a lifelong baseball fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates, which is a small market team, this is not a mid-market team. Salt Lake is a small market team. It's the 29th market in terms of size in America. It would be one of the smallest television markets. And by the way, in baseball, they don't share television contracts. So
yeah.
You get what your size of your market is if you're lucky. It's not competitive baseball. This is the thing about baseball. If we're excited to watch, you know, 80-something games at home, but 100 losses a year, which is what Kansas City Royals and Pittsburgh Pirates and the small market teams
Denver Rockies,
then I guess that's a great idea. But I don't just like baseball. I like competitive baseball. This system for Major League Baseball does really, really well for the owners. So why would there even be owners in these small market cities? Well, the big teams like New York Yankees and Los Angeles Dodgers, they have what they call a luxury tax. As soon as their collective salary for their players gets over $370 million, they have a luxury tax they have to pay the small market teams. Those small market owners get a lot of money from those big giant contracts those big market teams spend, but they're not required. There's no salary cap, no salary floor to put that money into the salaries of their baseball team. And so you see a disparity of the amount of salaries paid for baseball teams. You see records in these baseball teams that look like that. And that's just baseball. But I'm going to tell you to tax every single county. If you live in Southern Utah, you're closer to the Los Angeles or to Las Vegas. You could probably go to a Major League Baseball game a lot quicker than what you're going to be taxed or the people are going to be taxed in Washington County to see the one up here in Salt Lake. So it just seems like in the public finance part, there's graveyards of publicly owned sports venues around this country that get torn down with existing public debt. There's no example where this works.
This has been an interesting education because I'm not super educated on this.
But it's a bummer because I will say I am a supporter of MLB. I think this is a substandard package that we can do better. I think we should say yes to the Millers. I just think we should not do it rushed and have to trade out on stuff.
Why can't they borrow the money at the state rate or do something like that? Why do you got to raise everyone's taxes and hand it over?
Or geographically based, or don't just do transient room and actually make these billionaires be more cooperative. But there's just so many good solutions. And I'm not against government funding either. Like, I'm not against any of the fundamentals. I just think this execution has not been the best we can get.
Well, let me ask you this. How does Seattle, Washington, which I wouldn't call it a Republican bastion, require that the NHL expansion team, the Seattle Kraken, it's a privately funded arena. It didn't take the taxpayer dollars to do it. So no one can tell me that there's not a private way to fund a stadium
Although
or an arena.
A highly unusual model. I mean, very few.
You're
can
right.
Actually
but I'm just
do
saying, but just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly.
I'm saying if I can find examples where and they've shown that this won't be shocking, those that are privately financed are a bit less per square foot, like they aren't. You know, they don't cost as much, but you're getting the same thing. So I'm just, it's actually.
The other
it's actually depressed
the
me.
The one other
honestly,
also
it's
ad,
made
I'll
me
say
depressed.
As a liberal, I always get nervous when we have business cased out the restaurants, bars, revenue, franchise agreement, but they are, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it when it comes to law enforcement, homeless, housing, affordability, and neighborhoods being taken care of. We're hearing a whole lot of, don't worry, we'll do the right thing there. And then we've got some fine details around the economic, the private sector stuff. I always get nervous with that. But here's how this story ends. And what I think we need to grapple with in Utah is it is and was inevitable, it seems. You know, I mean, that was what I'm struck by this process is that the inevitability of it.
It's like so Thanos how do you, from Avengers.
So how do you reconcile that, I think, is a really interesting political question. Whether you're for it or against it. How do we change
the system?
You're
only allowed to be for it. Didn't you get the memo?
So is it going to pass?
Of course.
The memo's been sent.
It passed out of committee unanimously. So yeah. Republican and Democratic support. Everyone who testified, it was probably 9-1 in favor. It's a bipartisan celebration. Like, this thing's going to fly.
Okay, so let's switch to the NHL. Get some ice involved. The Capital City Reinvestment Zone Amendments. This puts much of the decision-making power into the hands of the city by letting it create a sports and entertainment project area. It could be up to 50 acres. It's that basically area all around the Delta Center. It allows bonds to be issued. It would also raise Salt Lake City sales tax if you're buying anything inside the city from 7.75% to 8.25%. That wouldn't be the highest in the state. I did some research. I think Park City and Summit County has the highest. Theirs is at 9.05% or something like that. The mayor's already said that she's on board. Are we hating this as much as the other one, or are we buying into this, Greg?
Again, we're back to the taxpayer paid arenas, which I do question whether that has to be the formula. But at least this one takes the geography and the location in which this would be built, and it looks to raise the tax and leverage the tax base of that area to build the arena. That is a far cry from a statewide tax of everybody for something on North Temple in Salt Lake City. This at least looks to build it up from the ground, trying to capture a tax base from the activity that would happen on that property or that area, that entertainment district area. Of the two, I mean, I joked with Senator McKay, I've never seen a bill look more beautiful when it's compared to the other one. It shines compared to the other bill. So if it was on its own, it might have more critics. But when you compare it to the other giveaway, this one looks a lot more fair.
Bad and less bad is awesome.
No, I think this is a good bill.
I'm kind of there.
I'm not even at less bad. One of the things that it does is that the legislature stays in the lane that I think they should be in, which is, hey, local jurisdiction, we authorize you to make a choice. Yeah, and so now what will happen is the local jurisdiction, Salt Lake City, will make the choice. And that's where the decision should be made. And the local jurisdiction will be in control. Now, I am more impacted likely by this bill. This is an area where the broader area I work in. And so I will likely pay more incremental tax this way. And I think this is a great investment of public money. City's in control. City can make decisions. And really importantly, as a Salt Laker, who is now facing some pretty steep taxes because we're tax and spenders here, which I'm okay with, one of the things that I think is really important is the case for support here is I totally agree that downtown Salt Lake City can't afford to lose the Delta Center. So this also has a different sort of value calculation. Mm-hmm. Is I think there's, if you talked about a missed opportunities on North Temple, I don't know that MLB is the best opportunity there. But for sure, it is critical that Salt Lake City and downtown keep its arena. So this also really reinforces existing assets. So I think this is a clean, good bill. The levers are where they should be. Interestingly enough, it's about the same level of investment. So when you look at it from a taxation point of view, the lift is pretty similar. But this is a clean bill that has the mechanisms where they should be, which is hyper-geographic and local control. So I think this is a good bill.
And this is what I'd say. If the Republican, supermajority of Republicans are sending $2 billion of taxpayer money to these two, an arena and a baseball stadium. How about some dealing with the crime here? How about having a city where whether it's the homeless issue or it's the rampant
crime. I
think
they're trying to pour money on the homeless
issue. I mean, I don't know how good of an investment $2 billion is going to be if we're not going to see the lawlessness addressed here or the homelessness. We've got some this city of Salt Lake has some real challenges, of which I'm not seeing aggressively addressed. And then while that's not happening very well, you got $2 billion of new investment coming into the city. I don't know. I hope something becomes a catalyst to see things turn around in Salt Lake City. Maybe this will be it.
This was a fascinating process to watch both of these bills unfold at the same time. I don't know who.
There's been some planning going on behind the scenes.
Well, I mean, it was bad
people
planning.
That have power and money.
Yeah, well, they didn't make a
if
good plan.
If you told me
they
that the theme of this
plan.
Session would be feathering the nest of two billionaires with arenas and baseball parks, I would not have said that would be the theme for the session this
and
year.
And again,
but that's
what's
it.
Interesting is I'm for the investment. I just think process matters. And one got the process right. I think the other, it's the less, I think we can do better than we're doing. Which also, like, the issue I remembered I wanted to talk about.
Oh,
was
yeah,
the
you
tax
have one you
want
to talk about. Hey, before we move on from this NHL thing, don't forget, I just wanted to say I'll be interesting to see what they do with it because I don't know a lot about hockey. I've never been one to watch it. But people who love hockey tell me that watching hockey in the Delta Center is not going to be fun because the way it's built, you don't see the sidelines. And so I'll be interested to see if they can make it a place that's where you want
to. They're going to have to change it. Yeah, it doesn't lend itself. I watched Golden Eagles games there or hockey games, mm-hmm. and the sightlines, there's parts you can't see. So it would have to be a different arena or they'd have to reconstruct it or do something. By the way, NHL has a far better financial or just arrangement on how and how competitive these teams could be. So Las Vegas got an expansion team not long ago, the Golden Knights, and they won the Stanley Cup not long after. There's a parity and a competitiveness in the NHL and how it's structured with, guess what, salary caps like the NFL and others that baseball doesn't have. But that is a sport, and it's an Olympic sport. We are an Olympic city. I mean, there's even a stronger connection there with hockey just because of the Winter Olympics. And it's a sport that, again, I'm a fan of, but it's a competitive one. Every team, whether the size of the metropolitan area, has a good shot.
All right. Miracle on Ice here in Salt Lake City, Utah. We're hoping for it to happen. All right. Tell me about
your
bill.
So the issue that this was coupled with that I keep thinking is so interesting is, I think it's in the House. Greg may know better than I. The tax cut, the $170 million proposed tax cut this year. And I just find these two conversations that are happening, or the three conversations, I just don't even get them. I don't even get how you can offer. So I just, here's the tax cut. If you make an average, so $33,000 to $61,000, you get $43. You're going to get your $43 back. If you make a little more, $61 to $99, you're going to get $67 back.
Yeah.
I just feel like you just gave a bunch of money to whether, and I'm for the stadiums, but I think they're on the nice list, not the need list. And then we do still have major affordability and housing problems, although I know they put a pool of money aside. We just saw a round of budget adjustments in which we're going to do okay. But there was an interesting article in the Deseret News yesterday that suggested that if in fact they pass this tax cut, it may impact the current budget numbers, make it not look so appealing anymore, that it may end up biting us a little later only to give us, $43 back.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I was doing the math last night before I saw those numbers that you had, and I was looking at it, and if you make $50,000, $50. If you make $100,000, $100. It probably sounds good for the legislature to say, guys, we gave you $170 million. But when it comes down to each person, I'm going to fill up my gas tank once, and then I'm going to get charged more when I go to the grocery store with my higher tax rate there.
Well, again, it adds to my mood. It's bipolar. If you're a Republican, you're a supply sider, and you're trying to say, look, money inside people's pockets, money for people and businesses doing, to invest or to expand or to hire more people, all of that's great. I'm a supply sider. I do not know how you raise taxes to the tune of $50 million a year, bonding for $1 billion, raising taxes statewide for a baseball stadium while you're handing out a tax cut. Pick a path. Are you a supply sider or not? I mean, I just find it to be the depth or the substance of the policy seems to be more shallow and a box to check to say, as you've said, Heidi, I got to cut taxes. when you're raising taxes across the state. It feels more like political pageantry than anything substantive. And I'm just surprised. I did not expect that out of this session this year. It's been hard to watch.
Yeah, there's been some interesting surprises. And going along with this, too, we weren't planning on talking about it, but there is an alcohol bill that I didn't realize was going through right now, too, which is interesting because I know there's always a waiting list of people who want to open a restaurant and they want to serve alcohol, and we just don't have enough licenses. So apparently, this one is getting pretty hot and heated, and I think what they're trying to do, Mara, you understand this better, but right now I think you have to have there's one license for every 10,200 people in the state. They want to lower that to 7,200, and that would come with some trade-offs as well.
Yeah, the 10-2 is arbitrary, and everyone agrees that it was just chosen. It's not tied to anything.
It was just a number.
So the reduction is not tied to anything either. So you can, meaning you can make that political choice. And the other thing I think that is also coupled with it is they're looking at an increase in what is already an incredibly marked up commodity, right? Liquor is marked up at about an 87% rate. They're also trying to tie this to homelessness, which, to be honest, I find offensive.
Where's the homeless guy?
I just feel like this is like when the lottery helps children. And I also just find the coupling offensive.
So they're
and
saying that,
so in keeping with our bad attitude
so
about consumption.
They're saying that homeless drink?
No. Well, that
they're using that rubbing
the
alcohol.
Services
they're not buying
by all of those nasty bad drinkers will use your sin tax to pay for homelessness seems like a good bit of bad economics and some pretty snarky virtue signaling on the state's part. So the bill's getting a little gnarly. It hasn't been settled yet in terms of what its ultimate outcome will be. I think at the 100,000 foot level, to get more licenses, particularly when you look at how much growth we're looking at, it's almost just staying up with growth. It's not like we're going to be littered with bars.
Well, we saw this back when City Creek was being finished and they had restaurants there. There was a shortage of liquor licenses. Mm-hmm. And so we actually went into a special session to change the quote, the population quota to allow for more liquor licenses because we were seeing development, we were seeing new restaurants come online, and there weren't licenses to meet that demand. And so I think to your point, Mara, as the state continues to grow, this is just a natural reaction to that. You have to have those licenses for those restaurants and bars to be successful.
But I think, don't you think that since Republicans have taken this perfectly good free market commodity and socialized it on their own, don't you think you should stop virtue signaling at least? Like, I always feel like when a cop pulls me over, he should either give me a ticket or give me a lecture, but not both. Mm. And that's sort of how I feel about our liquor laws. Either give me a ticket or give me a lecture, but don't give me both. Like, don't vilify it and do all this. Just like you've already taken this perfectly good commodity and you're just like blatantly using it for your own good. It should be a part of the free market. And you're doing that by doing all this silly
it's
virtue signaling.
History. When I was there, they always, they like one year we raised law enforcement on DUIs.
Yeah.
And funding those when we raised the number of alcohol, liquor licenses.
Even though we know that kind of policing doesn't have any efficacy.
Yeah. Well, so I think you're right. You have to feel good by doing it, so you got to throw some money towards a good
cause.
Where's
the church at on this conversation? They're always in the conversation, right?
They are always in the conversation.
And by the church, I mean the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Just in case that we're not
confused. By the way, that was an easy one when it was City Creek, I'll just say.
So when the property owner stood to benefit.
The Cheesecake Factory. Yeah. That had
a lot less speed bumps.
I hear
in
their
it.
Private financing is doing well. Yeah. So
Otherwise, Victoria's Secret could have taken that spot, and we know that would have been bad.
No, that wouldn't have worked.
They are in the middle of it. I mean, they are really good at navigating this. This has been an area of interest. And I'll say it should be an area of interest. I mean, they're for abstinence, and they are in the middle of this. So
they're a stakeholder. They have an appropriate role, I do believe.
Oversized role, but I'm okay with it.
I think they have an appropriate role. I think that if we were in Rome and the Pope or the Catholic Church had an opinion about what was happening in Rome, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I would think they are a stakeholder in that city, and I think that they are stakeholders, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So it's good.
This was just a random thought, but when you said Rome, have you guys seen any of the idiocy that's coming out of the Google image searches? So they have a new AI.
No.
And apparently their AI was
trained. How do you find this?
just read the news. But basically, I guess people were asking it questions because Google, I think people have been talking more about ChatGPT and others. Right. But apparently the Google searches, people would go in there and say, show me George Washington. And it would be like a black man. And they're like, okay, well, that's not George Washington. And then somebody said, show me the Pope. And there was a black man and a black woman. And while there's been a whole lot of popes, there's never been a woman. And I think there's been like Latin American popes, white popes. But whoever trained the Google images is changing like historic artwork. Show me the girl with the pearl earring. Also,
maybe they were just showing you Janetta and Joe Pope.
Maybe. So they need to work on like getting it right.
I mean, you know. Yeah,
so are you saying that there's a political correctness to the AI, that they're trying to be sensitive to the diversity of individuals?
No, she is not saying that at all, Crazy Grace.
I'm saying.
That's not what she was saying.
No?
No.
That they're not being accurate to
history. They were people of color, everything that was not color.
No, that wasn't the point of the story.
I want to go ask it, though. Like, show me Greg Hughes and see what it shows me.
And it, okay, Mark. And if it shows me.
As a woman.
Are they just trying to be more diverse?
Maybe.
They, the internet?
Yeah, no, the AI, whatever the we're people, calling it, whatever the robots, AI's pronoun is. What do you call AI?
Oh, so now the AI is liberal?
I don't know, man. Doesn't it
you
think?
You are in so much trouble if thinks. AI is liberal.
Oh,
my work here is done if AI
is true. I totally believe it's liberal. I think those that designed it were liberal, and they made it to
be
liberal.
Well, then my work here is done.
I think
I shall sleep easily.
Yeah, you're going to lose a job, though, I hate to tell you. They're not going to need you anymore because they get you covered.
Yeah, that's inevitable.
Feed us what the internet tells us to give us. That was Random Thoughts. Coming up this next week, well, first of all, Saturday is going to be the primary in South Carolina. That's where Nikki Haley is down by about 30 to 33 points, depending on what poll you're looking at. The 538 average, I think, has her behind by about 30%. Then following that, here in Utah next week, we are going to be dealing with, in March, our presidential preference poll. Is that what we're calling it? Yeah. I keep wanting to call it a caucus, but it has a more official name. I will not try to disrespect it. And then we have a Democratic primary going on. And along with that, Nikki Haley, who is not dropping out of the race, will be here in Utah speaking at UVU and the Herbert Center. That happens coming up on Wednesday next week. And then the GOP presidential caucus, I'm just going to call it that instead of a presidential preference poll, is March 5th. Nikki Haley, Mara, is she wasting her time, or is it important that she's still a part of the conversation in a very weird year where we should be able to have
people
to decide between?
And here's why. We just got, I am feeling so flattened this week by political inevitability, and that is why Nikki Haley should stay in. I get it. Mr. D. Trump is going to be the guy. But that does not mean that the discussion should be over. I am buying what she's selling. We don't have kings, and we deserve to have conversations. The
Except
other
on
important
the Democrat
thing,
side, right?
The other important.
Is there any good,
what are you
is there any good
about?
Debate?
Look at there's six people in this.
Yeah, it's getting the same
there
attention,
are six
isn't it?
People in this. So I love that she's staying in it. The other thing that I think is really important is she still has the money to. What does that mean? That means people who want that political
Democrats.
Conversation are still supporting her. And that's why we exercise our right to support people. She still has money, which means there's still people who want to hear what she has to
Democrat
say.
Donors.
She's not being crazy about anything. She's just calling into account two old men. And I'm loving that she's
this
staying
is the perfect,
in.
You're the, you've said it all. You've made my case. Democrats absolutely want Nikki Haley to stay in the race because it's always nice
That's
when a Republican
true.
Rips on
Biden
Trump
wants her
and not
out.
Them.
Biden's
no,
campaign wants a head-to-head.
There's no, look, her
all
largest
the,
donor,
all the Democratic
her largest donors are Democrats. So
all
I'm telling you.
All the Democratic strategists want a head-to-head.
Should we still have a race right now, though?
It's
frustrating
it's not real.
To me that we're at a point where we're having primaries and caucuses, cacti, I'll call them, kind of like cacti, that we're still having these, but there's like no one, what's the incentive for anyone to show up to these? Because if we already have the inevitability, it's like, why get involved? Why show
I think
up?
We're, I
why
think we're
be
being,
a part of the conversation?
This is my conspiracy hat, theory hat coming on. I think we're getting duped. I have a hard time believing that Nikki Haley is, I've heard it for so long that she's 30 points behind in South Carolina. She is the two-term governor of that state. I do realize that many of her political appointees that went upward and onward are all supporting Trump. I see all that. I've heard the negative commentary about her in her own state. But if she really only lost by 12 or 15 points, it would look like she overperformed at this point when everyone thinks it's 30 points. How in the world, if you've been a two-term governor of that state and you can't get closer than double digits against an opponent, are you a viable candidate? So I don't think she has viability. If she loses the way they're saying that she's going to lose, if it's a close race and it's in your own state, at least shows that you have some electability. But if you can't win in the state in which you served as governor and you lose by double digits, I just think it's not real anymore.
But she's not wasting your time, so what do you care? You don't have to listen to her.
You just like her because she rips on Trump, and you need more than just Democrats to rip on Trump.
Everybody who rips on Trump. Yes. But that's like my status quo. I'm going above and beyond.
So
here.
I'm just saying, liking her in the race is just not
wasting
really
your time.
It's just entertainment for you. You love it.
She's not wasting your time.
I don't have a dog in this race. I'm not allowed to have an opinion, but I do appreciate that there's still a conversation just because it feels frustrating to me. And I think it's just because we know that there's an inevitability this year that I appreciate there's still a conversation to be had. I'll be interested to see at the presidential preference. It's like preference, like the dance where you get to go girls pref. I'll be interested to see how many people show up and how many people still vote for people who may have dropped out of the race, like if there's Ramaswamy fans or DeSantis fans. Yeah. It'll just be interesting to see. But I do think there's going to be a lot of people who maybe would have showed up to talk and like vote for them that now that everyone's dropped out, that they just aren't going to make the time to show up because it takes time.
Yeah.
And I went online yesterday. You can vote absentee, but there's a process to it. And I think someone told me I didn't go through the process because I didn't have the time on my hands. But you have to fill out a paper. You can fill it out. Then you have to drop it to somebody in your neighborhood who's in charge. It seems sort of labor intensive if you don't want to show up and have to do something else.
Yeah, that's the slogan of the caucus. Labor intensive.
Labor intensive. Yeah. But if you want to be enjoying the Democratic primary, Marianne Williamson, Gabriel Cornejo, Dean Phillips, Frank Lozada, and Joseph Biden Jr. will all be there that you can vote for. So that's coming up. I know a lot of people have.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to get past the South Carolina primary because I think that just kind of. It's been weighing so heavy. No, I just think that it's just kind of signals whether she's viable or not. And then we can just move on from there.
So when is she done, do you think?
Well, the Democrats will continue to give her money to run so that she can still be that gadfly.
How dare anyone exercise those rights? How dare they?
Well, they're not doing it for the most.
How dare
I question the motivation, but that's okay.
But you don't question Trump's motivation.
No,
here's my question.
You can donate to anyone you want. It's a free country. I'm just saying those that are, I don't think they think they got the horse that's going to win the race.
I'm glad
I think
she's
they're just
coming.
They're
I'm
doing it for other reasons.
So here's the question I have. We have a presidential debate that's coming up here in Utah, and it's one of the last ones before the election. Are we actually going to see our presidential candidates on the stage in Utah, or are we going to put all the planning in and we're going to have an empty stage that nobody shows up to?
So Trump is the master of having, you know, wagging the dog. And he can see down the road to say, oh my gosh, I own every debate by my refusal to show up and the continued response of the far-right media to give me a platform as an alternative. I think there's no way he cannot screw around with the presidential debates and do the old, am I going to show, am I not? I think he's going to totally mess with the debates. He has so far.
What about Biden? I mean, is he going to show
up? Well, see, this is the conundrum we're all in. Do we give Biden an hour platform? No. Yeah. But what happens
I don't believe that Biden will be the Democrat. Nominee. I think there's going to be a switch at the Democrat
You're
National
still sticking
Convention.
Okay.
I do.
So
I fundamentally believe
it. I never want to feed Greg's crazy, but there's this really
maybe it'll be RFK Jr. only on the stage
it's
and nobody else shows up.
The Ezra Klein Show, which is Washington or New York Times.
Okay.
But really interesting discussion about here's how an open Democratic convention would work.
Oh, amazing.
And
how do they work?
He walks through this like, wouldn't it be cool if the Democratic convention, we didn't know what was going to happen.
Oh,
like, how amazing
this is such a new concept.
So
yeah.
I just think it
if
really
If I'm Kamala
is.
Harris, I am invoking the 25th Amendment and getting him out of there now so that I got my place as the incumbent because she is going to get shown the door. It's going to be Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom.
President Newsom.
Yeah.
I hope it's Newsom. I hope it's not Michelle Obama because I am afraid of her. I think she'll win. Walking away.
She could arm wrestle you and take you.
No, she's going to win. She's very popular. She'll win.
Yeah. I want to check in real quick on the primary races. I know that we're not paying a ton of attention to them, but Governor Cox, I saw, turned in his 28,000 signatures. When I checked, nothing had been certified yet. Blake Moore, I think, was the first to actually have his certified. He might be down by a couple hundred. And in the third district, I cannot talk today. Someone needs to put me in bed. Interestingly enough, Case Lawrence, who is a newcomer kind of to these political races, he's already turned in his 7,000. What I'm sort of interested in is how quickly people who I think otherwise a couple of years ago would have been very against getting the signatures to get on the ballot are like, all right, let's do it. Let's get the signatures and go for it.
I suffered from an unintended consequence or an unexpected consequence in the convention only path this last summer. Yep. So I've been,
Have you learned your lesson?
If it had been a more traditional to come out of the convention, I would have been fine. But where I was in a winner take all special election, there was a lot, you can throw a motion at delegates at the very last second where it's not as high information of an election cycle as I love about the caucus convention cycle. And so I think there's some pitfalls there that I think people have watched in this last go around and don't want to be subject to last second attacks where, you know, people would vote out of fear instead of maybe the candidate they
like.
So
the governor watched what happened to you in the caucus.
I don't think it's the governor, but I do think that like a candidate like Carolyn Phippen for Senate, I think before she would have been a convention only candidate, and I think she's pursuing signatures now. And I think her example of why would be because of what some of the games or things that have happened in conventions as of late.
I'm pleased with the mainstreaming of the signature gathering efforts. One, I think it makes for more rigorous primaries, which I think helps average people participate.
More choices.
Yeah, but I do think I really like that the litmus test is slowly going away. As Greg said a few cycles ago, it was a dicey move, mm-hmm. particularly for conservatives. It never was for Democrats or moderates, but it was a dicey move for a hardline conservative person to say, oh, they weren't going, they were going to signature gather. It was somehow a capitulation to the moderate Republicans. Now I see that test going away and people just see it as a strategic move and more candidates, even hardliners seem to be getting
the
signatures.
The reason I liked it is I just think it's a higher information election cycle, meaning you get to look at people, answer whatever question they have for you, and you better have an answer. You better be able to make your case. And I love holding candidates to a standard that high versus direct mail.
Having more people vote for them.
Direct mail and just the mass media.
Hey, I say if it's good enough
substance.
To elect people in November, it's good enough to make the decision in a primary.
You mentioned Carolyn Phippen, and I wanted to mention her really quickly. I'm pretty much sick of talking about Natalie Klein at this point, but she's still making headlines with just about every city council, county council, school district asking for her to step down or censuring her in some ways. The legislature did. Carolyn Phippen got into the conversation this week talking about some of the conservative talking points, saying that if we're going to hold her accountable, should we be holding others accountable? I'm interested to see what you have to say about it. She's running for the Senate seat that Mitt Romney is walking away from. One of her tweets this week said, could someone please send me the new speech rules in Utah? Apparently the governor publicly calling a special needs kid an a-hole is appropriate. A sitting state senator commenting positively on a child being used for sexual gratification is appropriate. Posting a public photo and stating a fact, then apologizing is not appropriate. She says, I'm just trying to get this straight. Who wants to go first on this? Does she have a valid point that we're not holding everyone to the same account, or where do you stand?
Certainly there exists in the political arena selective logic and selective outrage, and it's just inherent, and it does exist for fact. Hats off to KUTV's Brian Mulahey. I thought that his ability to get Natalie Klein on in a long interview, at least you got to hear a perspective from her of maybe parents that had reached out to her asking questions about the teams their daughters were playing and how they weren't able to get answers. I'm not making any defense for her. I'm just saying that it was interesting to hear what her mindset was when she posted that, and to hear how when she saw the direction of the comments more focused towards the student athlete, she took it down. I was glad to hear that because I do feel like that poor young lady was so unfairly highlighted and it was wrong. And I don't think that even in her explanation, I don't think gives her any pass. But I liked that you have a reporter here that she was willing to at least explain and express her regret and admit that she was wrong. But I think that context is important. And I think that there was some good journalism that helped bring that out and inform the public.
If you want to hear it, it is posted in its entirety. I think it's about 40 minutes on KUTV's YouTube page. So you still, what would you choose if you had to say, go counsel her? Does she need to step down? Should she not run? Is her apology enough?
I think that because uniquely she's facing a re-election in real time, that there is no greater lever of accountability than this campaign and election right now. And I think that her opponent, I have to imagine that this is going to be a major issue in that campaign. And she's going to have to make her best case and let the people decide. That is going to be the refiner's fire on that issue. The issue that I've had is I've watched this happen, though. I think if we do have, if we feel badly that this poor young lady, this basketball player, was unfairly targeted or highlighted in a wrong way, I don't think continuing to talk about Natalie Klein and that incident serves that young lady necessarily. I think that how she gets her life back or how she gets to find normalcy versus how we punish Natalie Klein, I don't think it's the same path. I don't think it's the same way. I don't think you do the same exact things. She's got an election to face, and I think the people will speak, and they will be the ultimate decider, and I think that's very appropriate. And I would like to see this issue, at least for and on behalf of the young lady that was in that tweet, I'd like her to disappear, like not have a digital footprint or record of that question and that issue that she has nothing to do with. I think she deserves to have a private life and enjoy her high school years. And I'd like that to be left alone. So I don't want to stoke the fires, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Mara.
So I'm going to maybe shift away from Natalie Klein and stick with Carolyn Pippen, because like yeah. many people, Pippen. I'm not dismissive of it, but I feel like the Natalie Klein issue, I think she's lost the public trust and confidence. I hope she has lost, and how we all express that is through an election. Mm-hmm. But I hate this tweet from Carolyn Pippen, because it went the wrong way. It's dragging us deeper into the mud. She's flippant. She's sarcastic. She's trying to score political points. She's also taking the rare point of view of defending Natalie Klein's position, which if I was her campaign advisor, just probably wouldn't go there right now. I'd stay out of the race. I'd stay out of that conversation before. Now, I know she's trying to make this very sort of conservative free speech argument, but you're running for the United States Senate. And I respect the office too much for you to be flippant and snarky and have cheap political, the governor did this, this did this, this did this. And that's not how we're going to get to judge behavior. And we're doing it more and more in politics, which is to say, Heidi did something bad, but, you know, Greg the day before did something worse. Nope. We should choose what our values are, how we vote, how we make decisions. And if you don't live up to the standard, and if you don't live up to the standard, we should litigate those one for one. And she just took this already tough conversation and over-politicized it and made it snarky. And so I sort of would have been neutral about her. She's clearly not ideologically in line with me. This takes her off the table for me as a serious person, because I don't believe we should be going into the mud more right now. And you want to be the United States Senator? This is not in my mind. I want decorum back. I don't mind conflict. I think the governor's doing a horrible job with his disagree better too. But what I want is people having discussions worthy of their voter, and this is not a discussion worthy of the voter.
I think it's a little more substantive than you just described, because I do think that when you call someone an a-hole because you've been told that somebody said a racial slur at a basketball game and you're not, I think that, you know, ready, fire, aim in the public square is a bad thing. And I think that how we respond to people that ready, fire, aim, say something without being informed about what it is, we ought to be able to say these things actually do happen and they're not good, but where
that's not
one
what she
gets,
said, Greg. If she wanted to make a policy well, point, that's a ready, fire, aim. I think she should have made the policy point. Okay. She chose not to do that.
I think that
she
was what I think that
snark.
I think there was a bit more
I understand
seriousness
her intent.
To that, but
no, this is not how you express seriousness.
Right. Okay.
If you want to be serious, be serious.
I feel your look. I'm not going
to
argue with you.
If she wanted
it's
to be
Friday.
A serious person,
it's Friday.
She should have used serious vernacular. She wants to be snarky, then hey, go lay with
the butt. Aren't you limited on the words you can use there? Maybe she had to say it quickly. You know? Maybe you had to be. Maybe you had to be succinct.
You get to say more.
Maybe it's a succinct.
I like how you're really thinking.
That's right.
You know, mine are very long. Nobody reads them because they're very, very, very long.
Nobody.
You see my texts.
I have pages.
They're like crazy long.
Telling me I don't know what you're telling me.
I know because you'll never read it. See, she had to be quick. It'd be quick. Maybe that's not snark.
You know what?
It's
Friday. Let's just say okay.
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 I know. I feel like everybody's exhausted right now. If you're listening from the legislative session as you're driving home, good luck with this last week. Please use our money, our tax money, wisely. Make good decisions. Remember who you are. Return with honor. What else would our moms tell us?
That's right. Make good choices.
Make good choices. That's the big one. Yeah. Greg.
Don't make decisions out of fear. I like that.
What's your big pressure this last week? What's weighing on Greg Hughes' shoulders in the legislative session?
In the legislature, I'm working on some rural counties, and so Kane County has a reservoir, and it's exciting. The watershed that they can capture. You know, it's a desert state, and it's the last funding out through the door. They've secured grants. They have local funding, and the legislature has an opportunity to help fund that reservoir, and it predates the Colorado Compact, so it doesn't mess with the allocations of the Colorado River, which makes it less complicated. And
I love a good body of water.
Yeah. And 1922, it's because it's a closed system.
Yeah, so I think that's one that so what's going to happen this week is there's going to be a list that of agreed upon budget items, and there's going to be a zillion people that look at that list and either find what they asked for or what they hope to see on there, and then there'll be people that it's not there. And then that's when the dogs and cats start to fight and people try to get theirs on the list and people try to protect what they have on the list from getting taken off the list or shrunken. And so there's a lot of offense and defense on budget issues that are going to be played next week.
Good times to be had by all. Yeah. Are you going to just stand up and watch it all, or do you have a cat in this
These are fight? Famous last words. I'm going to have to knock on wood, throw salt after I say this because hopefully my expectation for me next week is that I'm a spectator. So this was a tough week for some of my issues, but that's because we do sort of really the gnarly part of policy, so the nuance of it gets really tight. I hope I'm just a spectator.
Well, I hear it's a thin budget. They've had so many years where there was federal funds. It was high times. This budget is pared back. It's a smaller budget, so there's probably less of those fights that are going
to
happen.
They did foreshadow. I mean, they told people really early needed to come in with cuts. So hopefully that eases. Well, I guess we just have adjusted to that pain threshold, and hopefully it stays.
Which is crazy because a couple of years ago we were like, dollar bills, yo. We're so rich. What do we do with all this? Let's
now
roll around.
We're
in
giving
it.
Tax cuts, and then we're selling stadiums like nobody's business.
Yeah, we got a stadium for everyone who wants one. Well, thanks for joining in the conversation. Enjoy this weekend. It's going to be gorgeous out there because winter, which hasn't really made it to our valleys, is coming next week. So get your boots out, get ready to go. You may have to finally shovel. Thanks for joining us.